A lone CDC agent on the trail of a body missing from the morgue. A political kingmaker about to make change in the course of history. A mysterious installation deep in the New Mexico desert. A brotherhood prepared to do anything to stop the coming tide. And more bodies found across the country completely drained of blood. An epidemic of vampirism is sweeping the United States. Listen to Raymond A. Villarreal speak about his new novel, A People's History of the Vampire Uprising, an incredibly unique and intelligent read. I'm your host, Danny V. If you enjoy this episode, please check out our back catalogue of incredible authors chatting about their work, including Will Kostakis, Longmire's Craig Johnson, Kate Forsyth, Jackie French, and many more.
You are listening to Words and Nerds, talking to your favourite authors.
Welcome to the podcast, Raymond. I'm really excited to chat about your novel, A People's History of the Vampire Uprising.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm definitely excited about talking with you about it. So it's just to let you know that it is fiction.
Yes, it is. As we know it.
As we know it, exactly.
I'm also really excited when I get to speak to someone around the world, right across the world too. So that's pretty exciting.
No, it's exciting for me too. It's strange. We're probably like on opposite ends of the world or something.
Yeah, absolutely. You know. With about a 10, maybe 9-hour time difference. So it's fantastic that technology allows us to do this.
Exactly. I think so too.
Now, when I saw this book on social media, I knew I had to read it. I grew up with the Lost Boys and Anne Rice vampires, and they've always fascinated me. But in your novel, you do something a little bit different. You don't glamorize them, and it's unique in many ways. Can you talk us through how this idea emerged for the book?
Sure. I think when I first got the idea to do a vampire novel, just so you know, I'm sort of an expert at starting novels and not finishing them. So this one was something I actually wanted to finish. It's something, you know, I wanted to do it similar to my favorite vampire books, with, you know, like Dracula, Salem's Lot, Interview with a Vampire. Those are my favorite types of vampire novels. So I wanted to do something similar, but I wanted to keep it in reality just because I thought that would, you know, be a different take on it. Just, you know, what if it really happened? And you know, in doing that, I thought of it as a virus. And so that's sort of how I took off from there.
It was so interesting that you subverted this typical glamorization of them, because I think vampires, although they are terrifying and they feed off our blood, there is that kind of glamour about them. So what was different about this novel? You said you're an expert in starting novels, which I think is pretty common with writers. What was different about this novel that made you finish it?
Honestly, I think I'm probably going to sound funky, but I started doing yoga and then meditation, and I think it really focused me a lot on finishing something, or, you know, and the second thing was, I think also the way the book was structured, it's almost like, you know, four or five different little novels almost, because they're all in first person from one person's perspective. So I think that made it easier too for me to finish it.
I really liked the way it was written in the different forms and from different perspectives. And I particularly liked, you know, the nod to popular culture throughout and the articles from Celebrity Gossip, Huffington Post, and I particularly love Mummy Blogs Galore.
Oh, yeah. No, those are the things I really enjoyed writing, those types of, you know, because they're kind of short but funny kind of and kind of interesting. I mean, you can sort of go too far, I think, with the pop culture, because then it seems dated after about a year or so. Yeah. But you know, I thought it was, those are the fun parts for me.
It was fun reading it too. And the reality is, this is how people obtain their news, information, or perhaps misinformation. And you really tapped into that really well. And you also included, you know, American Bar Association Law Journal and Harvard Theological Review. So it really showed that these gloamings, as you called them in the novel, really bled their way into society.
No, yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, excuse the pun.
Yeah, I'm going to steal that. But yeah, I think, you know, just like you said, in some way showing how they, you know, in such a short period of time, they completely take over or a large part of society. And so I think, you know, when that happens, whether, you know, whether it's, in a book of fiction, or whether it's nonfiction, whether it's, you know, a disease or something, that it just becomes part of the culture and part of everything. And so everyone, every aspect, everyone's writing something about, you know, a new disease or a new illness or something. So
it's interesting that all the different perspectives come through and all those different types of media. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, no, that was fun for me, definitely. I thought it was interesting because, you know, especially with the internet, there's so many ways of getting news now. It's just crazy. So, you know, I think that's a good thing, though.
Yeah, absolutely. As long as you're, I guess, going across all the medias and not just focusing on the one, because I guess then you can get a biased news.
Yeah, no, that's true. I totally agree. Although there is, talking to you, there's one media I didn't put in was a podcast. I should have put that in. I'm thinking about it now.
Well, maybe there's a sequel in the works and you can
exactly. Do a podcast. Yeah, I can do it that way. You know.
Happy to chat to you further about that.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, Dr. Lauren Scott, she's a great character. She's a research physician initially working for the CDC, and she explains the virus to us, the NOBI, and some of the descriptions are really detailed with scientific and medical jargon. How much research did you have to undertake to get this right?
Well, it seems like I did a lot of research, at least to me, you know, it's just, but I kind of like that part of writing, because I guess part of it is it's a way to sort of procrastinate not having to write, but another way it's just kind of interesting to look up stuff I don't know about. But it was a lot of research. I tried to make it fit as far as dealing with, you know, a real blood-borne illness, but if I could make it fit, then definitely I would make it up. So, you know, I guess it goes both ways.
It sounded real to me. I have no scientific background whatsoever, but I was impressed.
No, most of it's real. Most of it I can't take credit for. So.
But I guess with the vampires, you have a little bit of room and space where you can make stuff up a little bit.
Oh, no, that's true. Yeah, definitely. I think you can go in a lot of directions making things up for a vampire novel. And I think that's the fun part for writing it and probably for reading it too. At least for me, when I read vampire novels, I think it's a fun part.
Now, was it fun? You're an attorney. Was it fun to use some of your knowledge of law in the novel? Because these were probably things you already knew.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because I guess the way my mind works is when I'm thinking of something like a new virus, I always think of the first thing I think of is, well, how would the law handle it?
Mm-hmm.
And we see it in many other, you see it in other viruses, I imagine, you know, how the law, you know, either protects people or discriminates against them just because they have an illness. And so that was sort of my first thought, you know, when writing it, was how would people react to, you know, vampires or, you know, people with this virus? And, you know, would they try to deny them housing? Would they try to deny them, you know, equal rights, that type of thing? So, yeah, definitely as a lawyer, that was sort of my first reaction when writing.
And that was really interesting, and I found particularly interesting the Disabilities Act and whether recreating enabled you to have accommodated structures. And in one part of your book it says, but when a person willingly brings changes of a harmful physical nature which are an absolute certainty, then the Act should not afford the person the same protections afforded to those who have acquired the limitations through no fault of their own. And that got me thinking about, you know, if there was a new species or a subspecies, all these laws would have to change and possibly accommodate these people. I found that such an interesting part of the novel.
Yeah, to me, just the whole concept is interesting that, you know, that whenever we have people that are different from us, you know, we would hope that the laws would accommodate them, but you never know, you know, sometimes they don't. And it's just interesting to see how different governments in their laws, how they, you know, deal with people that are different or that have something in them, an illness or something that makes them different. So, yeah, that's interesting to me also.
Mm. I really enjoyed the variety of characters and perspectives in the novel. I think it provided such a rich and complex story from a multitude of people. We have Dr. Lauren Scott from the scientific medical part. We have Father John Riley. We have an FBI agent, someone from Homeland Security. Take me through the character creation and development of all these characters in the process.
I guess they all came about as far as me thinking of how, you know, who would be involved in a virus that turned people into vampires. I mean, obviously it would be the government first, and my first thought was the CDC, you know, they analyze and they look at new diseases and stuff. And so from there, it went into, you know, an FBI agent because, you know, you'd have to have some sort of law enforcement. And of course, the whole with priest, I guess that's sort of the easy way out with vampires. You know, you always want to put a priest in there, Catholic priest or something, you know. But it's also, for me, it was fun to sort of see how different religions would react to people who were vampires or people who, you know, were different from us or something. So that was the fun part for me, was because it's always, you know, you're always going to have religion involved no matter what.
Which of the characters was most fun to write, do you think?
Probably the Sarah Mesley character, only because she's like a vampire killer, so that was sort of fun.
Yeah, she was great. She kicked butt. Yeah. I liked her too.
So like my version of Blade or something, you know, so it was a fun one to write. I just, you know, just having someone kicking ass and stuff. So that was probably the most fun.
It was fun to read too, and I particularly like that she was a, you know, female butt kicker too. I enjoyed that.
Oh yeah, definitely. The reason she was female actually was because originally she was a nun, but we actually took that part out in the editing process because I think they felt it was maybe a little bit too much religion. You know, you have a priest and then a nun, then she became a nurse. So. But yeah, no, it was definitely my favorite character.
Now I must say the novel made me laugh, even though it's quite serious, especially the celebrities when they were referenced as being recreated. Firstly, why Taylor Swift? That really cracked me up.
I don't know. It seems like, I mean, I guess that's sort of like the easiest one to go for, I guess. I don't know. I mean, that's probably one of the more well-known celebrities. I mean, I was thinking of who would want to be a vampire. That was sort of my first thought.
I definitely saw it.
Kardashians or something. I don't know. You know, that would be like them.
I definitely saw it. I thought, yeah, Taylor Swift would be down for that, I'm sure.
Yeah, you know, so... But yeah, no, it's fun to think of things like that. So.
And in part, it was kind of, I felt like it was a satirical take on pop culture because they've already got, you know, fame and money and adoration, but that's not enough. They want, you know, immortality and all these heightened abilities as well.
No, I think that's true. I think, yeah, I guess once you have everything, there's something new you don't have, I guess you want it. So, you know, I mean, I guess that's what they want, but definitely with people who have it all, so.
And it was intriguing too, the Gloamings were quite selective in who they recreated, creating a powerful elite group of people who, like we said, they were already powerful and elite. And I kind of found myself reading the novel as a social commentary on issues of the elite and people living in poverty. I don't know if I read too deeply into it, but...
No, I think that's true. I think that, you know, I mean, we see that all the time, you know, with people who, you know, maybe the 1% or something who probably want to keep it for themselves, you know? I mean, yeah. And there's many ways they do that, either through the law or through, you know, just however they do their business practices. So I think that, you know, I think it's easy. I mean, it's probably easy for me to write that because, you know, that's probably just the way it would be if it was real life, you know? I mean, yeah. I don't think they'd want to keep it, you know, to themselves, I think.
It was interesting because people chose to ignore the fact that most of their membership was increasingly restricted to the top 1%. Wealth, looks, and talent seem to be the main criteria.
Yeah, no, I think that's the way it is with a lot of things, too, you know, unfortunately. But yeah, that's just sort of how I approached it. It was sort of my take on how people that, you know, I mean, I guess if you look at movie stars or something, they're usually the best looking or, you know, that type of thing. So
even vampirism, we can't even get access to that.
Yeah, we can't even be vampires, right?
Sorry, Gloamings was the
Gloamings,
preferred.
I'm sorry, yeah.
I liked that. Where did that come from?
Oh, I was trying to get a term. I was trying to write it to where I wouldn't use the word vampire. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's in the title now. But, you know, I was trying not to use it. And I think we only use it like 3 or 4 times. Maybe 4 times. But I was trying not to use it. In my version, I don't think I used it once. And so that was the term that, you know, I had used. I saw in a poem, so.
I liked it because I thought, you know, with vampires comes a lot of stereotypes and a lot of history. So I liked it because you were able to create something new.
Yeah, no, that was exactly my point. I think, you know, when you put the word vampire in there, it carries a lot of baggage with it, whether good or bad. Yeah. So, you know, you kind of want to get away from that and do something different or new.
And it certainly was different. I also loved, I mean, I keep talking about the social commentary, but, you know, the pop culture part and the satirical tone about Sasha Bowie. And I thought it was such an authentic description of how the wealthy and others use social media. It says, of course, as we all knew, Sacha Bowie was pretty busy Instagramming, Snapchatting, and tweeting her glorious life and numerous parties and premieres, and therefore that made her too busy for an interview. And I thought, what, you know, it is a historical account of our present. You know, people are going to look back and go, that's actually what people were doing.
I think that's true, yeah. I think people, you know, you look and see that people do that. I mean, that's sort of, I mean, people in that kind of position, that's sort of their life. I mean, they spend hours doing that, so, you know, I guess it's part of the brand or whatever, so.
Yeah, I thought it was funny because, you know, it's meant to be a people's history of the vampire uprising. I actually think in 10 or 20 years it's going to be a history of how we lived our lives.
yeah, for good or bad, right?
Yeah, that's right. And I also love when books really sort of, I mean, it's a very Australian thing as well, when we kind of take a dig and we have a love-hate relationship with places, and I think there's two mentions of LA here. And it says, how can you live there? And he says, oh, other than the urban blight, vapid idiots, endless traffic, pollution, how people couldn't care less about you unless you can do something for them or advance their career, a psychotic indifference to anything resembling empathy and a lack of soul. I love it. It's perfect.
You know, that's actually my attitude toward, I go to Los Angeles a couple of times a year, yeah, and I actually love it in spite of all that, you know, so I guess that's sort of me coming out a little bit, you know, and, you know, you kind of love hate something, I guess, yeah, makes the bond stronger. So, you know,
it's funny. It was kind of like vampires because although it's dangerous and there's some horrible things, there's something attractive about it. That says something about humans, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, you as well as I know that if this was real, we would be fascinated, probably would want to be it as well.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. Although the failure of recreation was quite surprising, and then people still wanted to progress ahead with this.
Oh, yeah, I think that's, I didn't want to make it 100% because, you know, that would not be realistic. But, yeah, I think even in reality, I think a 50% chance to do that, I think there'd be a lot of people taking that chance.
Yeah, like I was keen until I looked at the stats and I was like, oh, yeah, hang on a minute, yeah, I don't know, I need to consider this.
Yeah, maybe it's not all good. So yeah, no, I definitely would think twice.
Maybe when you're 85, so then it kind of, you know, cutting your losses.
Then you don't have to lose. So.
That's right. But you then have to be 85 forever, don't you? I guess there's...
Yeah, that would kind of suck, I guess.
Yeah, so I guess there is merit in doing it younger. Oh, it's such a complex, it's a minefield, really.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, eugenics is brought up a few times in the novel. Can you elaborate on how this plays a part in your novel?
Yeah, you know, that's actually something that's always interested me about how, because it's so, you know, I mean, on the one hand, you think, well, that's a pretty interesting concept. We should, you know, the ethics of it. But then on the other, when you think it through, it's like, do we really want to go that route? I mean, it's not something, you know, we don't want to selectively breed humans or something. So it's, yeah, that's something that's always interested me. And I think with a vampire novel, I think that sort of just, it's sort of natural because you kind of go into that sort of, I mean, that's kind of what they're doing. They're trying to select, you know, the best and the brightest. And then if they want to do that in a lab to actually make that 50%, 100%, then, you know, can take you in many different directions. So yeah, that's always been an interest of mine, definitely.
And the fear is who's doing the selecting, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, where does it, you know, who's doing the selecting? Where does it stop? I mean, what do you not like about someone? Or, you know, it's kind of the flaws that make us interesting anyway. So it's kind of a weird concept.
Mm. You also touch on political corruption when Nick Bindon Claremont wants to win an election as the first gloaming. Now, I feel like this also is such a parallel to our society, and it states that gloamings are moving from pop culture to politics, and it's interesting as we've seen this in our own political lives, haven't we?
Yeah, no, and we have. It's funny because, yeah, I mean, the book was actually finished before the American election, presidential election, so it's kind of weird. But that was all going on at the time, obviously. But I think that's the way, like, nowadays, you know, you get successful as a businessman, what do you want to do? Or businesswoman, what do you want to do? Run for office, you know? So it's kind of, that's just the way it seems to be going now. Mm. Celebrity equals, you know, being a political person. So.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting because although the book was fiction, there was so much in it that paralleled our lives, which I guess made it real for us and thought, you know, this stuff could really happen. You know, I don't think if there was a subspecies of gloamings, all of this stuff is probable and possible.
Yeah, no, I mean, God knows I'm at the point where almost, I mean, I'll believe anything can happen now.
Exactly, right?
Whether it's, I mean, come on, like, there's nothing that would probably shock us anymore. So, you know, but it's interesting to think of how we would approach it if it did happen.
Yeah. It's funny, you get to a certain age and you're like, oh, nothing shocks me anymore. It's a bit sad, isn't it? Yeah. I feel the same way.
Yeah. I think nowadays that age is even younger than nothing shocks people anymore.
Yeah, with all the internet and everything, people have seen it
exactly.
All.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, it's like we're definitely, you know, nothing shocks us, I don't think. Very few things.
Very few things, yeah. Now, vampires have a long history of complex relationships with humans, mainly because they want to drink our blood and they see us as inferior.
Exactly.
And there's a question in the novel that says, are we simply a vessel for food, or are we a partner species who coexist through a system of ethics that binds all knowledgeable species? How did you see humans fitting in or coexisting with these gloamings? Is
well,
it possible?
I think, honestly, I'm not even sure it's possible with the way that, you know, within the context of the book, I'm not sure that they could coexist. It didn't seem like, I mean, the way I look at it would be, it would be hard for them to coexist just because the Glomies rely on the humans for their, you know, sustenance. So it would be very difficult for them to, and I think the humans would regard them with suspicion anyway. So I think it would be very difficult for them to coexist.
And it's interesting because even though they may deem us inferior, etc., they need us.
Exactly, yeah. In many ways, I think, even aside from the whole blood, I think they definitely need humans in many ways.
Because there's no point in reigning power if you don't have anyone to reign it over.
I know. What fun is that? No, that's true.
Now, with the setting, you live in Texas.
Yes.
And was this a reason why you set it around kind of the New Mexico, Arizona, because you knew those types of areas, or what was your reason for that? Did you think
I actually like the sort of desert areas mm-hmm. around Arizona and South Texas and New Mexico. But part of the reason was because it was a border area, mm-hmm. and I thought it just seemed easier to put everything sort of in a border area, because that would lend itself to having the CDC go over there immediately, you know. So it just seemed the whole border area thing was the whole key for me.
I like the desert too, because it's kind of a dangerous place and a place where you can disappear easily.
No, that's true. It is. The desert is just really strange. So you know, but I thought it was, for me, it was a good setting.
And mysterious too.
Yeah, exactly.
So what is your writing process? I speak to a lot of authors about they plan and plot quite, you know, meticulously, or sometimes they just write and see what happens, or characters drive their story. What was your process for this novel?
I do like to outline, and that probably comes from just being a lawyer. So I do like to outline, but, I mean, there comes a point where outlining, you know, is sort of a way to avoid writing, so... You kind of got to quit, you know, outlining some part. But the outline never, I mean, I could outline, be real detailed about it, but it's never going to come out exactly. You know, it's always going to change as you're writing. So I think that, you know, that to me, you know, as long as I keep going and not procrastinate as much as I usually do, then that's sort of my process, just to outline and take it from there, knowing that it's going to change anyways, so.
Yeah. And what was interesting about your discovery when you're writing and then, you know, then you sort of fill in the gaps, were the things that surprised you as you went along?
The most surprised me was that I could have written a lot more, it seemed like it. I mean, the original was much longer than this. And so I guess it sort of surprised me that sort of where the story went and how, you know, we took it that way. And the political thing was a surprise to me, because I didn't plan on having a political candidate, but then it just sort of just came that way, you know.
Yeah,
so there was a lot of surprises to me in the process.
Yeah, not absolutely worked. I liked that angle because I thought, yeah, that would definitely happen. Of course they'd run for office.
right, who wouldn't? So, you know.
That's right. And I hear publishing process takes a lot of talent, a lot of hard work, but also a little bit of luck. Talk us through your publishing process.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree that it takes a luck as well, because the publishing process, when we I think we got, and I've been told this, I'm not just saying this, that we sort of got lucky in the sense that I had this book come out at the time of the election, mm-hmm. the American election. And so there was sort of that sort of, that's the way they had pitched it, was, you know, this novel is coming at the right time. You know, it's political in the sense that we just had this divisive election. And so I think that's the luck part. And that's how we got it, you know, went to auction, you know, instead of just going to one publisher. And so that kind of helped it, I think. And I think that helped the movie rights as well. So, yeah, there's definitely some luck. I definitely believe in that.
Tell us about the movie rights. That sounds exciting.
Yeah, no, we sold the movie rights to 20th Century Fox.
Wow.
And they bought it for 21 Laps, which is the company behind Stranger Things and mm-hmm. Arrival and a couple other movies. So hopefully, you know, you can always keep your fingers crossed that it will happen.
That'd be wonderful. Because even when you read it, you can see it, you know, as a film. So that's really interesting.
I hope so, yeah. I hope people can see it as a film.
Yeah, I certainly did. I wonder who they'll, if it gets off the ground, who they'll get to play the characters. That's really intriguing to me.
Oh, yeah, that would be interesting to me, too. that would be very interesting.
Do you have any ideal people, or?
No, I can't even, because I just, you know, it's hard for me to even think of what the characters actually look like. So, you know.
Yeah, because they're more of, you know, what they do and what they're thinking, I guess.
I kind of leave the character descriptions a little bit open-ended because I'd rather people kind of have their own idea of what they look like.
So. Yeah, and I think that's important because it's not really what matters, is it? It matters what's going on in their brains and the actions that they take.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. Yeah, definitely.
Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. I absolutely love this novel. Like I said, I've always been really intrigued about vampires and their history and the complexity of how they coexist, or maybe they can't coexist with humans. But I just thought this was an addictive, unique, and such an intelligent read. And if it gets to the big screen, I think it'll be just incredibly amazing.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Daniel. I appreciate it. And I had a lot of so much fun talking to you about it, definitely.
Thank you.
I hope everyone else enjoys it like you did.
Definitely. So do I. What's next for you before we go? Have you got something else in the pipeline?
Yeah, well, I'm trying to work on my next novel. It's going to be sort of a normal. It's going to be a mystery, so it's kind of normal. No vampires yet, so I don't think there will be any.
You're vampired out.
I'm vampired out right now, so that's going to be kind of a normal, more normal book, I guess.
Excellent. And you should be really good at finishing them now because you know you've done this incredible novel.
Exactly. Hopefully this is like a start of me finishing things instead of, you know, tossing them away.
Why do you think that happens? Do you get self-doubt or do you come up with another idea or what happens?
I think it's a combination of all those things. Mm-hmm. I think it's self-doubt and I think it's sort of like, what about this other idea? This would make a much better book. And then, you know what I mean? And it's like you're already, you know, somewhere else. So, yeah, I think that's, you know.
So
trying to work on that.
Your last bit of advice for aspiring writers, because I think that's such a common thing. You start, stop, you think it sucks, you have self-doubt, you read it, you go, this is fantastic. The next reading, you think it's the worst piece of thing on earth. What's your advice for just sticking to one idea and not moving across?
I mean, my easy advice is just finishing it. Mm-hmm. I mean, just because that's the advice I give to myself, is just finish it, you know, and don't doubt yourself because anyone can write a book. I mean, there are very few, obviously there's that sort of 5% of, you know, extraordinary authors, but the rest are just like you and me. I mean, we could all do that. So just, I would say don't give up, definitely.
Well, that is great advice. Thank you so much once again. Like I said, I loved this book. It's definitely one of my favorites this year. And thank you so much for talking to us all the way from America.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And I hope everyone in Australia has a good winter, which I did not know it was winter.
It's a horrible winter at the moment.
Right. But thank you so much for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for the chat, Raymond. It was excellent.
You are listening to Words and Nerds, talking to your favorite authors.